Welcome to the sermon podcast of South Hills Church in Costa Mesa. My name is Chris Kretzu, and I'm the campus pastor here. Thank you for carving out the time to listen to this today. I hope that you will be encouraged and challenged, and ultimately that you'll have a deeper sense of God's love for you. I'll be back after the message is over, but until then, I hope that you enjoy this episode. No, but there are these, you know, we're talking about expectations today. This whole month, we're talking about different challenges that we have in relationships. Now, these all show up in family relationships, but it's not just about family. This is not just about marriage or kids. This is not just about the people that live in your home. It also shows up in our friendships. It shows up in people that we work with and people in our neighborhoods as well. These are relationship dynamics. Now, we may experience the most tension in some of these areas with our families, with the people that you share a roof with or a house with or a bed with. And by that, I mean your kid who still climbs into bed with you in the middle of the night. There's these realities that we all have to face and we all have to navigate. And so we wanted to spend some time, and every year we spend a month just focusing specifically on relationships. And so today we're talking about expectations. I love movies. I love TV. I could just sit down and watch movies for hours and hours. And one of the things that movies really steered me wrong with was the beauty of childbirth. I think I've told this story maybe before, but I remember when we had our first son, it was obviously very difficult for me. And I was in the room just struggling along beside my wife. And I remember, you know, in this idea, this kind of mindset that I had of what it would be like would be this like really beautiful, special, clean, thing. And I remember when my son was born and the doctor was like handing him to my wife, and I thought it, but I actually said, is his head always going to stay that shape? Which my wife won't let me forget. That's the first thing I ever said about my son. So, and it didn't. It got really normal looking. So, but there's these expectations that were shaped by the movies that I had seen and kind of this idea of what that was. We have expectations as far as the way that we spend our time and holidays. How many of you guys, you know, it's crazy how quickly we're coming up to Christmas. It's 10 weeks from Christmas, just so you guys know. So if you haven't already bought your presents, they're not coming, just so you know. And the ones you bought are probably out there on the water somewhere. But we have these Christmas expectations, especially when you get married and you start to kind of try and combine different families and what those routines look like. And I remember it was this last Christmas, we were invited over to Todd and Leanne's house. Leanne's our children's director, and said, hey, come over for Christmas lunch. Whenever you guys are done, just come over. We're going to make this, you know, tons of food. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm like, great. So my family, like, we're very relaxed on Christmas, and we don't really move too quickly. And so we kind of move through everything, and eventually we corral the kids and get them in the car wearing whatever they had been wearing for the last 24 hours, because that's what Christmas is. And then we got to Todd and Leanne's house for Christmas lunch. And literally, as we walk in the front door with my kids, like wearing mismatched PJs and like not even having shoes on, and we're just like very comfortable, Leanne comes down the stairwell in like a gown and like does a little spin. No, I'm just kidding. But just like Christmas lunch at their house was a very formal, everybody was wearing button-up shirts and matching shoes and all these types of things. We didn't have any of those things, you know? But again, there's just expectations of like, well, some people, this is the way Christmas is. In their mind, there was no reason to tell us you're going to look like idiots if you show up in your pajamas, because everybody would wear their nicest clothes for Christmas lunch. And in our minds, it's like, why would we put on anything uncomfortable? It's Christmas, you know? So there's these expectations that we have. And then it's funny because we don't even realize half the time what we're saying and what we're thinking. Just this weekend, actually, on Friday, about a week ago, our refrigerator stopped working, which is always awesome, and we had a repair guy come out, and so we were at a wedding, and so we had one of our friends at the apartment to let him in and just kind of like hang out there, and so he's working for a little while, and this thing has been out, like I said, for like a week. We've been living out of a cooler in our kitchen, and I'm not sure the milk we've been drinking is still okay, but we've been just kind of powering through it. But anyways, he's like halfway through this repair, and my friend is so kind and thoughtful, and she says, can I get you some water? And the guy legitimately says, is it cold? And she said, no, the refrigerator's broken. And the guy's like, oh yeah, I just didn't know. And she's like, didn't know what? Like, literally, there's a refrigerator right here. We're paying you to fix this thing. There are just these realities, these experiences that we have where it seems obvious to us. It doesn't seem obvious to other people. There's these times that we think something is very clear, or it should obviously just be done a certain way, or we should communicate things at a certain time or in a certain manner. And these things feel so obvious to us, but somehow they don't actually play out that way. And this all has to do with expectations. We want to believe that there's one right way to see everything, to approach everything and interpret everything. And whenever there's a discrepancy, it's obviously their fault. It's the other person's fault. Like, no, my way makes sense. We dress up for lunch. Babies always look like this when they're newborns, whatever the thing might be. We always want to try and figure out how it's the other person's fault. And the reality is that we all kind of wish that the people around us thought about things just like we do. It would be so much easier if people just were a little bit more like me in every way. It would make things just run so smoothly. And this is the challenge that a lot of us really kind of wrestle with. And so I want to kind of talk about this a little bit, because I think what happens, and again, this is not just about marriage or if you have kids, this is really about all kinds of different relationships. And so we kind of show up in life, and we don't necessarily always realize it, but we have this box. And inside a box, it's full of kind of hopes, dreams, assumptions, and kind of the way that you have been raised, the family you grew up in, the communities that you grew up in. And so you kind of have this thing, and we may not always be aware of it. Usually we become very aware of it when we get married, because all of a sudden you like crash two things together. But sometimes people figure this stuff out as they're in college or in high school even, or even if you choose not to be married, there's just this reality. We start to learn these things. We have these hopes, desires, dreams, and they're all kinds of different things. You know, I just have wooden blocks. There's nothing too creative here. But you know, you have this idea of like what your career will look like, and kind of the assumption that comes along with that. You have an idea of like what kind of car you'll drive or what kind of car you won't drive, whether you're a minivan person or not a minivan person. You have this idea of whether or not you will get married, and the assumptions that come along with, well, who's going to do what chores, which is always a fun conversation. I was just started premarital counseling with a couple this last week, and we started going through this. I have this list of, okay, well, who do you think is going to do this? And it's like a list of 50 different things. And it's always hilarious who assumes who the other person, what the other person is going to do. There's always these, well, my mom always did that, and so obviously you'll always do that. Or my dad always did this, and so I'll do this. You know, there's this just list of things. You just assume, because this is the way it was in your life growing up. This idea of like, how do we want to raise our kids? How do we want to talk to our kids or discipline our kids? You have this idea of different dreams and passions and all these different types of dreams, hopes, desires that you have, the way that you want to interact with friends, the way that you want to have and build friendships, and also the way you want to be treated by friends. You have all of these different things, and we have these hopes and dreams and desires, and then ultimately what happens is we're in a relationship, and it can be any relationship. It could be a relationship with a spouse or a friend or a roommate. It can be a relationship with your kids. It can be any kind of relationship, and we take these hopes and dreams and desires and kind of these assumptions, really, of the way that things are going to go, and we just say, here, this is how it should look. This is what it's going to be like. And it's not mean. We don't have mean intentions. They're hopes. They're dreams and desires that we have had. Maybe we didn't even realize we had them all, but it's just this assumption of, here's your responsibility, is to make sure that things happen this way. And all of a sudden, what becomes, or what started off as this innocent, beautiful, kind of almost even subconscious thing, becomes these expectations. And it's something that you feel like you're owed, something that you feel like another person is responsible to make sure that you get these things. Expectations are the strong beliefs that something will happen or will be the case in the future. A strong belief that something will happen or will be the case in the future. You know, well, he or she or they may not do this now, but in the future, I'm sure that they will learn to be kinder to me in the morning and speak gently before I've had my coffee. At some point in the future, something will happen. At some point, this idea that the things will become a certain way, that this is kind of what expectations are, this reality that something will happen or it will be a reality, will be the case in the future. And oftentimes it happens, and these are created by two different ways. We attempt to recreate or to avoid something from the past. We attempt to recreate or avoid something from the past, and that takes hopes, dreams, and desires, and it turns them into expectations. And this can be in really healthy ways. This can be in unhealthy ways. We can be conscious of this. We can be unconscious of this. I grew up in a really chaotic home. The last few years that my parents were together, there was all kinds of chaos. And so I spent the next 15 to 20 years putting every ounce of effort that I could be in making sure that my home looks nothing like their home. I will not have this. And all of a sudden, even though it comes from a good place and good desires, there's this expectation that it will not look like it used to look like. Some people grew up in really healthy homes and they had really healthy relationships with their parents, or they saw that their parents had a healthy marriage together, or whatever it could be. And there's this expectation that it will look exactly like that thing. This attempt to recreate or to avoid, you all of a sudden you show up with this case of things that are not necessarily ill-intentioned, but they just become these expectations that you place on someone else, and it can cause so much tension. It needs to look like it used to. It needs to look like that relationship looked, or it can't look like it used to. I won't allow it. There's a passage I want to look at today. It's in Luke chapter 10. And this is there's a few Bible stories and a few passages that I try and avoid as much as possible. And this is one of those. This is a passage that I feel like has been twisted and abused and really kind of used poorly in a lot of different ways. And it's my intention and my goal to not do that today. But I recognize that some of you may come, if you've heard this passage, you may show up and you may listen to this and hear it through a very specific filter or lens. You may have like this idea of what this means based on what you've been taught or told before. And I want us to do our best just to kind of like take all of those things aside. And I want to read through this story together, because I think it really does illustrate some expectations in a really powerful way. Verse 38, it says, as Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. Now, it's interesting because this isn't just like, oh yeah, Jesus, come stop by. Like, Jesus traveled with an entourage. He had a posse of people. And so opening your home to him meant you are feeding at least 12 other people and probably more. There's this reality of, is there enough space? Is there enough food? Is there enough water? Is there enough way? Can we honor this rabbi in this way? So it's not just, oh yeah, Jesus, come over. It's a whole thing. It's a big to-do. It says, she had a sister, Martha, she had a sister called Mary, who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. But Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. She came to him and asked, Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? Tell her to help me. So even adult siblings have these same exact fights that my kids have as 6 and 10-year-olds. So there's this piece, and I want to pause here before we read into the rest of the story. And I just want to call this out, because I just want to be as clear as I can. A lot of times I have heard this story taught. I've heard this passage taught in a way that communicates that Mary was doing the good thing and Martha was doing the bad thing. That somehow Mary was making right choices and Martha was making bad choices. And the reality is that there's, as in almost every aspect of life, there's a lot of different kinds of people. People are wired differently. Did you guys know that? I'm going to blow your minds here. People are wired differently. They have different interests and skills and abilities and kind of natural tendencies. And that is so clear in family relationships. You can see that in a spouse. You can see that in your kids, the way your kids are different from each other. You can see that with roommates and with friends. You can see that with your adult family members. People are just different, and they take things and they hear them in different ways. And so this passage is not about one being right and the other being wrong. This is not about Martha somehow failing and Mary somehow getting it right. And I want to look at this just a little bit. These two find out that Jesus is coming to their house. And I think that they both probably automatically and maybe instantly had these assumptions of what they were going to do. I know when I invite people over to my house suddenly and without telling my wife, I have assumptions of what that will look like. And then she has assumptions of what that will look like. And mine is like, it'll be great. They'll be here in a little while. And her assumptions are like, awesome. Let's clean. I'm like, what? Why would we clean? And it's not just cleaning, but it's this whole like, okay, I want to make sure that we are caring for our guests. Are there enough seats? Do we have enough food or drinks? Is the refrigerator working this week? Like whatever the things are. But it's not that she's wrong and I'm right, although she would say that I'm wrong and she's right. It's not that one or the other. It's just that we show up with different, I'm excited to hang out. And I don't even have to give a second thought to what's, we'll figure it out. We've got something in those cupboards for sure. There's this just this natural difference that starts to happen. And I think that's what happens in this story. There is this kind of automatic assumption about what it means that Jesus and his entourage are coming because they are different people. And their perception of the situation, their idea of what's required from them is different. One sister thinks, I need to prepare. I want to get things ready. I want to make sure we have food, that there's enough space for everyone. The other sister thinks, this is exciting. This is thrilling. Jesus is coming to our house. And I can't wait to just sit and listen. I can't wait to just spend time with him. It's not that one's right and the other's wrong. It's that they are wired differently. They have very different expectations of what this is going to look like in this moment. The belief, the idea of what will happen is very different. And I think that the reality is our expectations are so obvious to us most of the time that we assume that they don't need to be said. We're coming up on 14 years of marriage, and we still have this argument. Like, what do you mean you invited people over tonight without asking, and they're going to be here in 10 minutes? It's like, it doesn't matter how much time has passed. There's still this just assumption of like, yeah, it'll be fine. There's this reality that we just kind of move into this. It's just a natural thing. It's so obvious to us. We don't always feel like we have to voice these expectations. I remember the first year we got married, we lived in what must have been the smallest apartment that anyone has ever lived in before. But it was a really incredible, beautiful city called Corona. So it was totally worth it. I'm just kidding. We lived in this tiny apartment, and whenever we would have people over, this tension would kind of arise in the way that we're different, wired differently, and Ez would say, okay, we got to a point where I was like, well, can you just tell me the list of things that you want me to do, and I'll do them. She's like, great. So I was like, yes, we solved this. So she gave me a list, like, yeah, I need you to, whatever it is, clean the dishes and straighten up the sofa, which also was our bed. I'm just kidding. It wasn't that small, but it was very small. Give me a list of things to do. And I was like, great, I will do those before they get here. And then I would go back to doing whatever it was, which was probably nothing worth doing. And then she would just get frustrated again, like, what are you doing? I was like, just chilling. She's like, well, what about the things? I was like, yeah, I'm going to do them before they get here. And then she would just start doing those things. I was like, what are you doing? Why are you doing these things? I said I was going to do it. She's like, just do them now. I was like, well, then say that, in the list of these expectations. But it's not that she's wrong and I'm right. There's this assumption. She's like, well, if these are what you need to do, then why don't you just do those now? And then we can be ready and relax and take a breath before people get here. And I'm wired lazily and procrastinatorily. Yeah, that's why I stick to my notes, you guys. I'm wired very differently. And it's not a bad or a good thing, although it creates tension in different ways. It's just a total difference. And there's just an assumption of why wouldn't you just do it the way that I do it? Or why wouldn't you just be okay with me doing it the way that I do it? We all have these challenges. We suffer and we feel this tension when our experience falls short of our expectations. Richard Rohr has this quote. He says, "Every unrealistic expectation is a resentment waiting to happen." Every unrealistic expectation is a resentment waiting to happen. And I have kind of adjusted it a little bit just because I feel like it's easier for me to remember. And I've this has really stuck in my mind. But this idea that unexpressed expectations are resentments waiting to happen. When you have an expectation and you have not made that clear, or maybe haven't made like the whole part of that expectation clear. It's like, yes, here's part A, and then also part B. When you have expectations you haven't communicated, you haven't told someone about, you haven't shared with your partner, with your spouse, with your roommate, with your friends, how you want to be cared for and loved by friends, it shows up in so many different ways. Unexpressed expectations are resentments waiting to happen. And then we get angry and we get frustrated. And again, I've seen this happen in so many different ways. I've even seen this happen in workplaces with bosses and teams. I've seen this happen with friends who just absolutely pour all of themselves out. And they love their friends in a specific way. And they just expect their friends to do the same exact things for them. And it's this unexpressed expectation. And it ends up becoming incredibly painful. Martha comes to Jesus. She's concerned, frustrated, upset, whatever it might be. She's angry. The scripture says that she's distracted by these things. She can't fully focus on what's happening or even what she's doing. And again, what I have grown to realize over the last 14 years is that she's probably doing what she loves. I know when I have people over, aside from all of the differences that I just shared, I love cooking food for people. And there's times when my wife gets frustrated with me because I'm in the kitchen cooking and preparing and getting seconds for people and getting dessert ready or what. I love that stuff. I love knowing that there's people hanging out and talking and that I am serving them food that is mostly edible. There is nothing better than that experience. And it causes a frustration on that side too. There's this reality that I think that all of a sudden she's distracted and frustrated because of the way that she's wired and she feels like Mary is not actually stepping up to those expectations that she has. I saw this graph this week. I recreated it just because I thought it was actually super helpful for me. Do we have the, that's the one. I don't know how to explain that. So you have expectations that are realistic or unrealistic. They may be helpful, they may not be helpful. And when you have these expectations, if the expectations are blocked, then usually we end up feeling anger. Like I was supposed to get this thing and somebody blocked that from me and now I'm angry. If you're not sure if the expectations are gonna play out, it starts to create a sense of anxiety, this kind of, I don't know how it's gonna go. I don't know if he's gonna say something stupid. I don't know. It was yesterday, our kids were hanging out with some friends and one of them texted me. She's like, "Oh, Arlo," who's my six-year-old, started singing this song and all the other kids thought it was so great. And I got terrified. I had this anxiety because his favorite song to sing right now is "I Like Big Butts and I Cannot Lie," which his mom taught him. But there's a sense of like what the uncertainty of what was said, what's going to happen, how are people going to react? It creates this anxiety. And that's for those of us that have an expectation. For the people that we are putting our expectations on, the people that we have delivered the basket of expectations to, if somehow they didn't feel like they were able to accomplish the expectations, it creates a sadness in them. If they feel like somehow they missed it, it creates a sadness. And if they have failed somehow, there's oftentimes like a shame that comes of, oh my gosh, I had no idea that I was supposed, you know, there's this shame that we can start to feel. It can be an incredibly painful thing when we have these assumptions of the way that things are gonna go. We assume that people know exactly what we want, what we're looking for. It doesn't necessarily go that way. And it can cause damage for us, stress, strain on the relationships. It can cause challenges for other people. It's a really difficult thing. I don't know that I really need to articulate how difficult it is because we've probably all felt it one way or another. And then we start to stew on some of these things. We replay them in our minds. We, you know, think things like if the only they had, or they should have, or they shouldn't have. We have these thoughts and these frustrations. And I think that it's interesting because for Martha, who was in the kitchen working and serving and getting things ready, you know, Jesus had just finished telling this parable of the Good Samaritan and how important it is to serve and care for and give and do for others. And so it's like, well, she's crushing it. There's this justification of like, I'm doing the thing that I'm supposed to be doing, and she's not. It's this tension that starts to happen. And I think that what happens is that Jesus starts to see the tension. In verse 41, he says, "Martha, Martha, you are worried and upset about many things, but few things are needed, or indeed only one, and Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her." Now, this is the part that I feel like has maybe been twisted in the past and used a little bit as like a weapon, especially for people that are wired a certain way. I think that the failure in this story is not about one person is doing and serving and preparing and the other one is sitting and contemplating and enjoying. I think that the failure is the tension that comes from assuming they need to do things the way that I'm doing things. They should be acting the way that I'm acting. They should be serving the way that I'm serving. They should be loving the way that I'm loving. They should be communicating the way that I'm communicating. There's this expectation that causes this tension that overflows, and Martha is just being fully herself in that, or Mary is being fully herself in that moment, and Martha has this frustration that Mary is not doing things the way that Martha wants to do things, the way that Martha thinks that things should be done. Mary's present in the moment. And I think that Martha's desire to dictate what she's doing is keeping her from connecting. I don't think Jesus is saying that sitting is better than serving, but that connecting is better than controlling. He used this word distraction earlier on in the story, and I wonder if he meant that it's not that we're distracted by work itself, but we're distracted by other people's failure to meet our expectations. And all of a sudden, now I'm not happy about what they're doing, and I'm not even able to enjoy what I'm doing. All of this is now bad. All of this is now frustrated. I'm owed something. They've somehow shorted me something that I'm owed. And I think that ultimately Jesus invites Martha to confront herself and to confront her own expectations. It's a challenging thing. It's challenging for all of us because it does show up differently in different relationships. And so it's always like, how do we find the illustration and how do we see a picture of what this looks like? But then what do we hold on to see change happen in our relationships, in our friendships, with our roommates, with our kids, with our adult siblings? Philippians chapter 2 says this in verse 3 and 4. It says, "Don't let selfishness and prideful agendas take over. Embrace true humility and lift your heads to extend love to others. Get beyond yourselves and protecting your own interests. Be sincere and secure your neighbor's interests first." There's this thing that echoes all throughout the New Testament. After Jesus' teaching about, "I want you to love others as I have loved you," it's said about 1,000 different ways through the rest of the New Testament, this idea of you need to be willing to sacrifice yourself for others, follow the law of love, the law of Jesus, this idea of the way that he says, secure your neighbor's interests first. It's this setting myself aside in order to care for others. And I think that one of the ways that this shows up in our relationships is this invitation to set our own expectations aside. And instead of assuming that they owe us something, that our spouse, some of us assume that our kids owe us something, some of us assume our friends owe us something. Instead of assuming that, it's saying, no, I'm going to set that aside. I'm going to remove this fake debt that I have created in my head, these expectations that they're responsible for. And let me focus on how I can serve them. I love the way it says, lift your heads to extend love towards others. So we need to recognize oftentimes that people may not have the same personality as you. Your kids may not have the same perspective as you. Your spouse may not have the same priorities as you. Your friends may not have the same pet peeves that you have. Your coworkers may not have the same capacity that you have, which means that they won't approach things exactly the way that you would approach things. And that's okay. The reality is it comes back to this unexpressed expectations, our resentments waiting to happen. Every single challenge that my wife and I have had around this idea of expectations, and this is just one of the easiest illustrations to use because she's not here. I'm just kidding. I know you'll all tell me, you'll all rat me out. Not everybody, but every time we've come into this issue where it's like the communications, the expectations, every time we've shown up in this space, when we've started to talk about it and just say, well, this is what I would like it to be done this way or by this time or in this fashion, it always ends up somehow being resolved. There's this reality that it smooths things out in a way because all of a sudden things become clear. One of our campus pastors shared this idea this last week. He said, there are two truths about restaurants to help you keep your expectations of others in check. The first one is that you can't expect to be served something you didn't order. And the second one is you can't expect to be served something that's not on the menu. You can't assume that you're going to get something that you never ordered, although I've seen people fight with people about this. And you can't expect to be served something that's not on the menu. I worked at In-N-Out. I had a long, illustrious career at In-N-Out. I was there for 5 years. And I will never forget the time that a customer was shouting at me because he wanted a chicken sandwich, and he used to get a chicken sandwich at In-N-Out, and how dare I tell him that there was not a chicken sandwich? And he was dead serious. It was not a prank. It was like he was committed to the bit, and it took everything in me not to laugh because it was ridiculous. You are asking something from me that's not even possible. It's not available. It doesn't exist in this world, in this dimension. This isn't a reality. In-N-Out does not have chicken. But this is somehow, we show up in our relationships this way. We expect things that we've never even asked for, and we expect things that may not even be possible. And so we need to ask ourselves, does this person know what I expect? Do my kids know what I expect of them? Am I able to navigate the reality of how they handle those expectations? Is my spouse, do my friends, do my siblings or parents, do they know? If I ask them, could they tell me what it is that I expect? Am I asking these people to give me something that they cannot give me? Am I enjoying them for who they are and what they uniquely offer? Am I insisting that they be someone that they're not? Donald Miller is an author, and he said, when you stop expecting people to be perfect, you can like them for who they are. I'm like, man, that is so true. I don't really expect people to be perfect. I'm not perfect. I just expect them to be like me, or at least as good as me in the ways that I'm good or bad. Anyway, just be like me. As we start to hang this idea up, this false assumption up, and we can begin to enjoy people for who they are. And with Mary and Martha, it's not about one being good and the other bad, and working is bad and sitting is good, or vice versa. There's different ways to demonstrate love. What if they are both right, and the only wrong thing is expecting someone to be who they are not and who they cannot be? Releasing others to be different from me is the key to reducing anger and anxiety in relationships. So just very practically, you guys can write these things down. There's nothing mind-blowing here, but we don't always think about it because these expectations are just pure good hopes, dreams, and desires that we have for our relationships. But there's three things that we can begin to do, three kind of ways that we can talk about or think about our expectations. The first thing is that they must be expressed. Our expectations must be expressed. We gotta say them. If you assume, need, require someone to treat you or communicate with you or show up in a certain way, you have to communicate that. They must be realistic. It's not a chicken sandwich from In-N-Out. It has to be something that they can do. They cannot solve your parents' issues. They cannot heal the pain that you've experienced in the past. They cannot provide you with something that only God has actually created or is able to provide you. You're created with something that only God is actually be able to fulfill. It has to be realistic, and it may need to be negotiated. It may need to be negotiated and renegotiated. Maybe every year, maybe every 5 years, you end up in different seasons and your kids end up in different stages and you have different numbers of roommates and there's different kinds of needs that are showing up and work expectations. And these things have to be renegotiated. What worked when we lived in a 400 square foot apartment 14 years ago does not work anymore. And a lot of times the tension comes because I'm still trying to play by those roles and the expectations have to be renegotiated. So there's an invitation for us not to assume or expect or require everyone to be exactly like us or feel like us, but there's an invitation for us to express our expectations, to be willing to negotiate what those look like and to make sure that they're realistic. And this shows up in every one of the relationships that we have. Let's pray together. Well, regardless of where you may be at in your faith journey, I believe that everyone has a next step that they can take. If you'd like more information about what it means to put your trust in Jesus, information about getting baptized, or maybe even attending a Discover class to grow more in your faith, you can visit us online at southhills.org/Costa Mesa, and then scroll down to the Next Steps section. If you'd like more information about tithing or supporting South Hills financially, you can visit southhills.org/giving. Thanks again for listening today, and I hope that I get to see you soon.